Welcome to the official UEFA Champions League podcast and our new mini-series, Classic Matches. In our latest edition, we're going to look back at two more iconic games from the competition's archives.
And we start with a 2018 encounter in Rome, a classic semi-final that saw 13 goals.
The whistle is gone! And Liverpool players go down to the grass and beat the turf with relief. They have the keys to Kiev, but only just.
We'll hear from Jordan Henderson and Virgil van Dijk on Liverpool's famous 7-6 aggregate win over the Giallo Rossi.
And how about a trip back to 2005 and this brilliant last four encounter?
Excellent from Vedegaard of Hesseling. Here's Lee. Brilliant cross. Philippe Cocu levels the semi-final.
PSV versus AC Milan and much more to come on UEFA Champions League Classic Matches. Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly, are back again. Chris, enjoyed doing the show last week. So we have two more games this week. And a quick reminder about why we're focusing on these in particular.
Yeah, Rob, to coincide with the fact they can both be watched in full on UEFA TV, that's UEFA's OTT video platform. Each week on Tuesday and Wednesday, they're showing full reruns of some classic matches, and this week it's all about these two games. So Tuesday the 19th of May from 1700 CET, it is PSV against Milan. And then on Wednesday the 20th of May at the same time, it's that great game between Roma and Liverpool. Fans simply need to go to www.uefa.tv or download the UEFA TV app on the Apple and Play stores and simply log in or register for free to watch.
Yes, and if you miss them, don't worry. Once they've been shown as live, they remain on uefa.tv so you can watch them anytime. Okay, Chris, so we're going to start with the Wednesday game then between Roma and Liverpool. So this is the second leg and it feels like the run-up to this tie in general is just as epic as the tie itself. So before we reflect on the 90 minutes in the Italian capital, let's set the scene briefly by looking at Roma's iconic quarterfinal comeback that season against Barcelona first.
Yeah, one of the great Champions League comebacks, Rob, wasn't it? Firstly, this was only the third time that Roma had made it as far as the quarterfinals since their one and only trip to the final back in the 1980s. Plenty more on that in a moment. So it was already a pretty sensational run for the Italian side. And then they ran into Barcelona. Not many gave them a chance over the two legs, in truth, in the quarterfinals. And virtually nobody gave them a chance after the first leg at Camp Nou when they lost 4-1. They scored two own goals and you thought, well, Barcelona are going to be in the semi-finals yet again. But 6 days later, it was completely different at the Stadio Olimpico. Edin Dzeko scored after 6 minutes. You still thought that was probably a consolation given that Barcelona had Leo Messi and all of their firepower. Then Daniele De Rossi scored a penalty after 58 minutes to jangle a few nerves before this happened late on.
Cengizunda with the corner, flicked goalwards and in by Kostas Manolas. And as things stand, Roma are knocking Barcelona out of the UEFA Champions League and taking place in the semi-finals for the first time in 34 years. A stunning night at the Stadio Olimpico. Roma had to score three times and score three times they have done. It is 4-4 on aggregate. Roma are going through on away goals.
So as you can hear, it was a truly momentous night, Rob. Just the third time a team at that stage had overturned a deficit of three or more goals in the Champions League. There's been a few more great comebacks since, of course, over the last couple of years. But I think it summed up Roma's rather cavalier approach, actually, that season. In Eusebio Di Francesco's first campaign in charge, they were incredible to watch. They had goals throughout the team, and it meant that going into the second leg of their match against Liverpool, which is the one we're concentrating on, even though it looked impossible for them to go through, the fact they'd done it against Barcelona, I think, gave them confidence they could do it again.
Yeah, that Manolas moment, absolutely fantastic, and that's how Roma got through. Liverpool had triumphed in fine style against Manchester City, of course, in the previous stage, and then the two sides met at Anfield for the first leg. So Mo Salah was facing his former club for the first time. He'd left the summer previous. And the Egyptian king was having the season of his life.
Salah wants it played into the channel. Firmino just outside the area. Now Salah just to the left. Goes for the far post!
What a goal! What a fantastic finish by Mohamed Salah! There is no end to this man's talent! There is no end to his goals! It's goal number 42 of the season, and it is as good as it gets for Mo Salah. Liverpool 1, AS Roma 0.
That first goal Salah scored was absolutely ridiculous in off the bar. Scored two in the end, made goals as well as Liverpool led 5-0. That's, Chris, basically that's a place in the final, isn't it? But they conceded twice late on at Anfield, and it did feel like there was a mood shift after those two late goals for Roma.
Yeah, it did. I was lucky enough to be at Anfield that night, and I would say it's the best atmosphere I've ever been in at an English stadium. Remember, they didn't score their first goal until about the 35th minute, by which time they'd already lost Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to a very serious injury. And then by the 70th minute, they were 5-0 up, Rob. And the noise was incredible. You know, there's all this talk about famous Anfield nights on the European stage, but it did feel like that. And it wasn't just the cop making noise. There were pockets of noise all around the stadium, including in the big news stand, which wasn't that long opened, in truth. So it was a sensational performance. But yeah, those two late Roma goals, you just sensed that something might be happening. And Liverpool had been a bit crazy that season under Jurgen Klopp. They'd thrown away that 3-0 lead at Sevilla in the group stage, remember. And I think it exposed some defensive frailties whilst they were fantastic going forward that campaign. And in truth, ever since Jurgen Klopp came to the club. But I think the fact that Liverpool weren't the best at the back and the fact that Roma had done it against Barcelona, it meant that there was a lot of talk, maybe even more talk ahead of the second leg about Barca's comeback than there might have been had Liverpool certainly won the first leg 5-0. And Jurgen Klopp and Gianni Wijnaldum were asked about Barcelona in the build-up to the second leg.
You know, strange things happened before already with games in the Champions League. So I think Rome already showed that they can turn things around. She showed it against Barcelona. So we have to be aware of that.
Barcelona thought probably, we have to ask them, that it's decided, because nobody could imagine that it can happen. But it happened. So if a warning was needed, I didn't need a warning. But if the warning was needed, then there's the warning.
So as you can hear, Jurgen Klopp there was in no mood, really, to even think that the impossible might happen again, Rob. And it was also interesting because there's always narratives and history around Liverpool wherever they go in Europe because they've had such a storied past. And they were back in Rome where, back in 1984, they had beaten Roma in the Stadio Olimpico to win the competition. You might remember it was a very famous night. It went all the way to penalties. Bruce Grobbelaar, their goalkeeper, did his wobbly knees or his spaghetti legs to try and put off the Roma players, didn't he? It worked. And Liverpool won the shootout and lifted the trophy for what was then, I think, the fourth time. And Jurgen Klopp was asked about this as well before the match. But in truth, he was in no mood to speak about history.
I really think, and I said it a few times, it's fantastic. And the specific story of Liverpool in Rome and having games here, that's great. But I think nobody here really thinks it helps a lot that our grandfathers won here. It's just a game in a wonderful stadium, in a wonderful city against a very strong side. And creating history happens not because you say it beforehand. It happens and then somebody will afterwards say that's history.
Jurgen Klopp bullish in search of a second Champions League final as a head coach, of course, after reaching one with Borussia Dortmund. And for Roma, well, no team had ever overturned a 5-2 first leg defeat in the European Cup or Champions League. So could they do it? This is how the drama unfolded.
Nainggolan, and he's gifted the ball to Firmino. He's got Mane to his left. He's been played in beautifully, and Mane has scored! The mistake from Roma, supremely punished by Liverpool. And that's the moment that Roma feared. Oh, it's bounced back in, an own goal! Oh, a crazy goal! Lovren's clearance hit the back of Milner and flew past Loris Karius. On a night like this, how much discomfort might that cause for Liverpool? By now, there's not any at home! And it will count! The Dutchman's first ever goal in the UEFA Champions League and a four-goal cushion restored. El Shaarawy curls one, save, it comes back out of Dzeko, who scores! The big man's on target for Roma. They need three more, but maybe you'd never know. The strike from Nainggolan, it's a super goal! It hits
hits the inside of the post and nestles in the corner. And Nainggolan relents like he doesn't quite believe. But it's 3-2 now to Roma on the night. They've got 4 minutes to score two more goals, and then it will be extra time. Here's a long diagonal for Roma. Cengiz Under trying to get away from Klavan. He's appealing for a penalty. He's got one. Nainggolan for 4-2 thumps it in. Is there time to even restart the match? Roma lead 4-2 now, on one goal away from forcing extra time. The whistle is gone. And Liverpool players go down to the grass and beat the turf with relief. They have the keys to Kiev, but only just beaten 4-2 in Rome, but through 7-6 on aggregate.
I was tense just listening to that, Chris, as if I didn't know how it was going to end, of course. But Liverpool winning with that 7-6 aggregate commentary. Brilliant commentary there from Richard Connolly as well. Let's go to the start of the game a little bit with the team news. Of course, there were some niggles in the Liverpool squad with Trent Alexander-Arnold, who actually didn't have a great game. It looked very raw in that game and kept getting caught out at right back. And Henderson and Mane, who Mane in particular played a key part in getting Liverpool over the line. Roma without Perotti and Strootman going into it. And, you know, we heard the goals from Nainggolan there at the end where he sort of... We'll talk about the third goal in a minute and the interesting way they didn't really celebrate properly on that goal. But he made a mistake, actually, for the opening goal for Sadio Mane. And for players of a less warrior mentality, I suspect, Chris, they could have crumbled after gifting Liverpool that goal.
Yeah, but Raja Nainggolan is a slightly different character to most footballers, isn't he, Rob? But agreed, I think Roma had basically played with complete freedom for the whole of that season in the Champions League under Di Francesco. And definitely that early Liverpool goal, I think, meant that they could just completely go for it, because it looked such a long shot for them to go through at that stage. And maybe, I think that certainly aided the match as a watch, because, as we mentioned before, Liverpool that season in particular, at the back, they were nowhere near as solid as they are now, most definitely. So you always sense that Roma could do something and maybe win the game, but the fact that their two goals to ultimately win it on the night came so late, it just left them short, but only just. And I think if you look at the aggregate score, it is incredibly close, but actually the penalty was basically the last kick of the game, and oh, for just a couple of more minutes, Rob, because it would have been really interesting to see if Roma had one last attack in them. If there was enough time, would they have scored? And I mean, that would have been amazing had both legs finished 5-2 to the home team.
There was that mad James Milner own goal as well, which we heard there, where the ball was sort of booted against him. And there were so many weird moments across the tie in general, and Liverpool were quite mad as well. I think I mentioned it on the podcast last week that they were as successful and as dominant as this current Liverpool team are. I loved watching that 17-18 team because, A, you had the Firmino, Mane and Salah dropped into a Petri dish together and just exploding. And then the defensive frailties at the back. There was no denying they could concede needless goals in an instant, but they managed to get this one over the line. It was Roma's first semi-final in 27 years, Chris, and you could see the disappointment, the heartache, particularly in the face of someone like Florenzi at full-time. I mean, how much would it have meant, do you think, to that Roma group to reach a Champions League final?
I think absolutely everything. Remember the summer before Francesco Totti had retired, and they'd lost Salah to Liverpool, who would come back and haunt them, as you've heard. And I think Daniele De Rossi had sort of taken over. I mean, he was already that, you know, Roman gladiator. But when Totti retired, all eyes on De Rossi, really, who knew he didn't have many more shots at getting to a Champions League final. And Roma as a club, not too often in the last four of the competition, let alone in the Champions League era. So for these players, I don't think going into the season, they probably believed that they would reach the final. But all of a sudden, when you find yourself one goal away, even with just a minute to play, then it becomes real, doesn't it? And then I think they look back at that, 35-minute period either side of half-time in the first leg, which ultimately was the difference. And Roma weren't alone in being blown away by that Liverpool team, particularly at Anfield. But I think if they could go back now, you know, even had they not conceded the fifth goal, it might have been key. You didn't think it was going to be important when Liverpool were rampant after 70 minutes at Anfield. But in the end, that's how tight it was.
Yeah, and I think you were making the point to me that they probably thought at that stage, Roma, Okay, yes, we've lost this semi-final to Liverpool, but given the talent that we had, and they would lose another talent, of course, that summer to Liverpool in the goalkeeper, Alisson Becker, but they probably thought this is a platform we can build upon.
Definitely. You know, this was Eusebio Di Francesco, as I mentioned, his maiden campaign. He was a player in the late 90s and the early noughties for Roma. He developed his reputation, particularly at Sassuolo, playing this really expansive, almost gung-ho, very attractive style of football. And his first year to take them to the semi-finals, given that Roma had lost big players and, as you mentioned, would lose big players. You know, here's a quote from him after the game. He basically said, look, this is the level we want to aspire to. This has got to convince us, he said, that we can compete at these levels. And I think there's an element of sadness that it went south, really, after this. It was almost like the expectation levels had been risen so much at Roma because they reached the last four. Everyone then wanted them to win the Scudetto. That didn't happen. And eventually, you know, Di Francesco actually lost his job within, what, a couple of years. He's not there anymore. So there's an element of sadness, I think, that this Roma team, given the brand of football they were playing, couldn't quite get beyond Liverpool and reach what would have been that maiden Champions League final.
Well, let's look at Liverpool now. We can't ignore the impact, for example, of their January signing, Virgil van Dijk, who came in after Philippe Coutinho's departure for Barcelona. He'd only been at Liverpool, what, 4 months at that point, but was already being labelled as one of Europe's best centre-backs.
Yeah, well, it's amazing, obviously, to get in the final of the Champions League. You know, it's been fantastic. Obviously, we lose today, but it doesn't matter. You come here, you know it's going to be difficult with the fans. It's going to be in your head that you're 5-2 up as well. So there are multiple things that plays a part.
Some of the footage post-match of that game is iconic because you've got the players being interviewed on the track, haven't you, at the Stadio Olimpico. And I think for many Liverpool fans, that'll be very memorable.
Most definitely. There were 5,000 official tickets. A few more made the trip to Rome, I can assure you. And you know, first of all, Rob, don't we always get told don't sign players in January because you might not get the best available or something? Well, Virgil van Dijk arrived in January of that season, and he's probably been one of Liverpool's best signings of our generation, maybe.
Yeah.
He's made such an impact there. But yeah, look, you heard in the clip, actually, I think you could hear that, well, what became extremely catchy Liverpool song, their version of the Ale, Ale, Ale chant. And you could hear it. That interview was done in the Olimpico tunnel, so quite a long way away from the Liverpool fans, but you could still hear it. And after Jurgen Klopp had done all of his media commitments, which are numerous and fairly lengthy, particularly in a semi-final, they were still singing, Rob. So Jurgen Klopp left the Liverpool dressing room, went out of the tunnel, around the track, and went over to the Liverpool fans who had to stay behind and applauded them.
I think they liked him. And amazingly, you know, of course, a year on, they'd gone to win the competition in the following season's final, and they love him even more. But it was still, you know, relatively, it's tough to say early into a manager's reign nowadays when, you know, manager's reigns last 2 or 3 years. But he had done such a miraculous job, you know, after taking over from Brendan Rodgers.
He had. And remember, domestically at this stage, he hadn't quite cracked it. But in cup competitions, I think maybe because the way Liverpool played, and they were basically all out attack, weren't they? That they were so aggressive, and they had the front three. This was the first season, as you mentioned, of Salah, Mane, and Roberto Firmino. And 2.5 years in, I think this was arguably, well, I say that comeback against Dortmund in the Europa League the year before was crazy. But I think for him to have led Liverpool back to a Champions League final inside 3 years of taking charge showed just how much the club had grown under him. You always thought they were going to be a good fit, but I feel the celebrations at full time, the love you heard there, it sort of went up a notch after this night, because all of a sudden Liverpool were back in the Champions League final, a competition that certainly in English football they lay claim to, and why not? They've won it a lot more than any other English side has.
Well, for Klopp, of course, it was his second European final with Liverpool after the UEFA Europa League defeat in 2016. But clearly, the team had come on tremendously as a group, dramatically from that game in Basel. And the players individually improving too. Someone like captain Jordan Henderson.
I don't think I need to speak about the manager. He's came to this club and just made such a special group of players, the fans, everyone. He's brought everybody together and he's created us such a great atmosphere. So yeah, hopefully we can work with him for many more years and we can be really successful and win a lot of trophies. I know how hard that is, but I feel as though he's a special manager and we're all privileged. As I've said before, all the players are privileged to be working under him and we try to learn as much as we can from him.
Well, he wouldn't know it, Chris, but the Champions League final would end in, you know, a heartbreaking defeat, the mistakes from Lloris Karius, the brilliant overhead kick from Gareth Bale. But when he took over from Steven Gerrard as Liverpool captain, he obviously saw all those, the footage of Gerrard lifting the trophy in 2005. And of course, he would get to do it in a very emotional fashion, particularly those celebrations with his father in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And in many ways, I think Jordan Henderson epitomises the improvement of Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp. There were a lot of naysayers, most definitely, even when he was signed, certainly when he was made captain. But I think he's proved all of them wrong and he's developed massively as a player and I think as a leader under Jurgen Klopp and now very much in that pantheon of Liverpool captains who have lifted the European Cup. And no one can take that away from Jordan Henderson.
OK, so you've got to want to watch that game after that. So on Wednesday, the 20th of May at 1700 CET, Roma versus Liverpool on UEFA.tv. And keep an eye on the Champions League's official social media channels over the coming days for some other great goals, assists and moments, like that goal from Salah in the first leg, from what was a terrific campaign. But next, we go back in time to 2005 for another comeback that just fell short on the UEFA Champions League podcast, Classic Matches. Next, we go back 15 years, can't believe it's actually been that long, to a semi-final between 1988 champions PSV and multiple-time champions AC Milan. Now, the second leg of this one in the Netherlands was special, but let's quickly recap the first leg at San Siro, Chris, so people can remember the state of play.
Yeah, well, Paul, I think it's important to mention, first of all, this was the first time that PSV had reached the last four since they'd won the competition in 1988 when Gus Hiddink was a bright young coach, and he was back in Eindhoven for a second spell. They'd been dominant domestically, and they made their way through to the semi-finals and bumped into the mighty Milan, who were huge favourites. But PSV actually played very, very well in the first leg, and they had numerous chances, and then they switched off twice, really. Andrei Shevchenko scored just before half-time, and then as the clock actually ticked past the 90-minute mark, John Dahl Thomason made it 2-0, and it was an undeserved healthy lead for Milan, who were the who's who of the best players in the world at the time, and they had won the competition 2 years before that when they beat Juventus. But I think what gave PSV hope wasn't just the first leg performance, Rob, but also the fact that in 2004, so 12 months before this game, Milan had crushed Deportivo in the first leg of a knockout stage tie, and then they'd lost 3-0 in the away leg to be dumped out. And it was a real shock at the time, but certainly in the build-up to the second leg, all of the talk to Carlo Ancelotti and his team was, is the same thing going to happen again? Are you confident this time you can see it through? So that was the backdrop to the game, which meant that you just thought, surely it can't happen again. But the way PSV had played in the first leg, I think gave them enormous hope that it wasn't quite mission impossible.
Regardless, 2-0 is still a formidable first leg scoreline to try and overcome in Champions League football. Not that it fazed Hiddink's PSV Eindhoven.
His part. On for Venegar of Hesselink, who's got the better of Stam! Just what they needed. They strike first and they strike early, PSV. Excellent. From Venegar of Hesselink, here's Lee. Brilliant cross, goal! Philippe Cocu levels the semi-final. Kaká. Ambrosini! Oh, you can't believe this! Milan have surely won the semi-final with an away goal in the 90th minute. This is Cocu, and he's pulled one back. 3-1 PSV. Wait, what, a minute or two to get another? You never know. Another look at the watch. It's now or never for PSV Eindhoven. It's got to go forward, and it does. It's deep. Dida comes, and Dida collects. And there is the final whistle. What a semi-final. It's so, so hard on PSV, but Milan will go to Istanbul.
You can re-watch the game in full at 5pm CET on UEFA.tv on Tuesday the 19th of May. Chris, of course, they did fall short, PSV Eindhoven, but that run is very memorable. Let's talk about the way that PSV started the game. And I really liked how, you know, watching back the game the other day, how aggressive and on the front foot and straight into AC Milan they were.
Quite literally.
They made things so unbelievably... Yeah, I mean, they made things so uncomfortable. I mean, there was a moment of misfortune as well, even for Paolo Maldini early on, when he tried to get his head in the way of an overhead kick from Jan Venegor of Hesselink and got booted in the head. And then he didn't seem right and came off later in the game. But the hustle from PSV in that first half was tremendous, you know, even before Park's opener in the opening minutes.
It was. And you have to remember the players that they were trying to upset, Rob. Paolo Maldini, you mentioned, Yap Stam, Nesta, Gattuso, Seedorf. This wasn't just any old AC Milan side. It was one of the best, really. And Jan Venegor of Hesselink was fantastic all night long. He bullied the Milan defence, which was one of the most miserly defences which has probably ever been created. And Maldini was incredibly brave to put his head where it hurt, actually. And Jan Venegor of Hesselink was key to the opening goal when he kind of successfully shrugged Stam off the ball, having got the ball from Park, who was then able to run on and score the goal because Jan Venegor of Hesselink had taken Stam out of the match. And we're going to hear a bit of Dutch commentary now. And the reason we're going to, Rob, is check out the atmosphere in the background, OK? It is so loud that you can actually barely hear the commentary team working for Dutch TV.
That's so loud, it's actually quite funny. It's brilliant. But so, I mean, you mentioned the players there. I will go through the Milan team. So Dida in goal, Cafu, Maldini, Nesta, Stam, then Gattuso, Seedorf, Pirlo, Ambrosini, Shevchenko, Kaká. And they even had the likes of Costa Curta, Rui Costa and Hernan Crespo on the bench. A tremendous AC Milan side who would, you know, of course, go on to lose the final to Liverpool. But this really was that brilliant Milan team, the core of which we did see as well in 2007 win the competition.
You mentioned 2007 quite rightly. This was the, in the midst of three finals they reached in 5 years under Carlo Ancelotti. And it was a mix of some of the old guard who'd been there for a while, including Costa Curta, but some signings like Kaká that gave them that X factor. And I think one of the interesting things, given we're talking about PSV, Rob, is AC Milan in the late 80s, early 90s had another brilliant team with a Dutch core. You might remember Hullit, Van Basten and Rijkaard. And fast forward to 2005 and this match we're talking about, they had two key Dutch players as well going back to their country on this night in Jaap Stam and in Clarence Seedorf, who'd already won it three times by this stage. So a nice bit of symmetry there, I think, that this great Milan team had a Dutch influence as well.
Of course, on the night, it was Aurelio Gomez in goal, one of those from that PSV side that would end up in the Premier League. Now, having watched it back, Chris, you know that the goal from Ambrosini, the away goal that really did kill off PSV.
Yes.
He had already gone in for an unmarked header about 10 minutes before that, like completely unmarked, as in defenders thinking it is pointless to mark him because there's Shevchenko and there's Stam and there's other more physical presences to worry about. And then sure enough for the goal, I mean, brilliantly picked out by Kaká with that clipped cross into the near post. But again, Ambrosini was just completely, completely free for the goal, which ended it. Also, did you think Aurelio Gomez should have kept it out? I mean, he was brilliant actually over the two legs, but should he have saved that one, do you think?
I think quite possibly. And do you know what? I'm not a goalkeeper, given I'm 5'4" as well. I definitely wouldn't have kept it out. But I think his reaction at the end suggested maybe he thought he could have done better. And do you know what? Ambrosini, the most unlikeliest of goal-scoring heroes, Rob. I had a look. Almost 500 appearances for Milan. He barely scored 40 goals. So what he was doing up there, I don't know. Because
well, it worked.
It did work because, you know, it was going to extra time and all the momentum you thought was with PSV. One thing watching it back, I just wonder, once they scored the second goal, which they fully deserved on the night, it was almost as if then they slightly put the brakes on, and that almost allowed Milan to get a bit of composure back. And Milan, you mentioned there, had already had a chance to get the away goal, and they knew the away goal would basically finish the tie off. And then, of course, having just scored, or just conceded if you're PSV's point of view, they went and scored again. And they had a couple of attacks after going 3-1 up, including one where Dida came in and took a big catch. And you thought, goodness me, if they score here, this place is going to completely take off.
There are some parallels actually between this and the Roma-Liverpool tie, aren't there? A little bit in the way those ties ended. Lee Young-pyo was, of course, an iconic member of that side. He whipped in a superb cross for the 2-0 goal for Koku. But there was a close-up of him on TV straight after Milan's away goal. He knew the tie was over at that point. And hearing back this interview from the time, you can hear how painful it was for PSV to go out.
Injury time is we didn't concentration. Yeah, it's very little bit disappointed.
How's the atmosphere in the dressing room after a match like this?
Yeah, I think we can go to final. Yeah, and then every player also thinking about it. But we are so too many disappointed.
Yeah, you can hear how gutted he sounds in that moment. They were so close to reaching a Champions League final and upsetting a great side in AC Milan. Well, I'm delighted to say a UEFA.com reporter who covers Dutch clubs joins us now, Derek Brutman. Derek, thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, am I right in saying that you weren't actually the reporter for this game, but post-match you went to the game and that's how you eventually ended up being UEFA's reporter?
Yeah, that's how these things work out, right? So the guy who was reporting had come over from London and he was looking for somebody local, and via a chance acquaintance in the Irish pub, that turned out to be me.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Well, a great game overall then, Derek. What are your memories of that? And the atmosphere, you know, we heard a bit of it earlier in the show. The atmosphere seemed unbelievable that night.
Yeah, it was. And I think the abiding memory is what you just heard in that clip is something that was so close. It felt like it was stolen. I spoke to a guy who works in the same place as me this morning about this. He's a PSV season ticket holder. He was at that match as well. And as soon as I mentioned that, you just saw his whole demeanor change. Even though this was 15 years ago, he's like, oh man, we were so close, because they played exceptionally well, especially in Milan, but also here in Eindhoven. And they were, you know, literally minutes away from forcing extra time, and who knows where it would have gone then.
Derek, when PSV fans look back now, where do they rank that side? Because a lot of them then went on to the Premier League, and Mark van Bommel went on to Barcelona, didn't he? So in the pantheon, if you like, of PSV teams, how highly is this one rated?
It's rated very highly, and I think in no small measure because Guus Hiddink was back in charge, and he had a natural click with PSV. So in his first spell there, obviously he'd won what was then the European Cup, and this in his second spell, he won the league 3 seasons in a row and got them to the semi-finals. But they had some great players, you know, like Gomez in goals. He was a folk hero here. I mean, they loved him. Big Alex in central defence. Like you say, guys like Marek van Bommel and Philip Cocu in the midfield. It was a team that was balanced, with, it had like South American flair, but also homegrown players like Theo Lucius. And very adventurous, you know. I think that was embodied by Young Pyo Lee. I mean, he was such an attacking left back, and he had a fantastic game in Eindhoven in that second leg. So yeah, it's rated pretty highly, that team here.
Derek, I remember a few years ago I was working in Eindhoven, and someone from the club showed me around the stadium a little bit. And what became clear to me very quickly is how proud they are, given the size of Eindhoven, that they have won the European Cup, that they have that in the trophy cabinet. What does the competition mean to PSV Eindhoven?
Oh, it means a huge deal to them. And, you know, as competition has hotted up over the years, especially with the re-emergence of Ajax, then their Champions League exposure has been limited. And, you know, Eindhoven is still a provincial town and the budget of PSV is limited. So I think they realise only too well that it's going to be difficult for them to compete with the Barcelonas and the Bayern Munichs and the Manchester Cities of the world. But it still holds a very dear place in their heart, because like you say, they won it, and nobody can take that away from them.
We heard a clip of Park's goal, and the atmosphere in the background was sensational. Did you sense before the second leg that even though they were 2-0 down, that the PSV fans thought they still had a chance of going through?
Almost definitely. If you remember the first leg in the San Siro, Milan took a lead in the first half. And after that, PSV, they absolutely dominated the game. They had so many chances. It was a shame that Jefferson Farfan wasn't in the best of form that evening, because he had, I seem to remember, three or four glorious chances to equalise. So the one each looked far more likely than a 2-0. So even though that was very disappointing, they realised that they could go toe-to-toe with this great Milan side. So confidence was pretty high going into the second leg, and, you know, as it turned out, justifiably, because again, they put in a really good performance. They scored early on through Park. And when it went to 2-0, you could really sense that they thought, this is it, you know, this is going to be our night. And then, yeah, it was actually, I realised, looking back in hindsight, that two of the players who would go on to coach PSV, so Van Bommel and Cocu, had very differing roles that evening. Cocu scored two goals, I mean, fantastic, especially his second one. This breaking from midfield was one of his trademark characteristics. Mark Van Bommel, unfortunately, he lost sight of Ambrosini, who had a free header to make it 2-1. And although Van Bommel had played well over two legs, people still remember him for the guy that let his marker escape and score the goal that eventually knocked them out.
I watched it back this morning, Derek, and I think the applause for the PSV players at the end rather told the story. There was immense pride along with the disappointment. Do you think the disappointment has almost only worsened because since then PSV haven't got back to the semi-finals and haven't really got back close to a Champions League final since?
Almost certainly disappointment still resonates. For a club the size of PSV, you don't really get too many opportunities to reach a Champions League final, and that was their moment. And two more or less last-minute goals in both legs is what did for them. And I think that makes it especially bitter. You know you weren't outplayed. You know you had enough chances yourself. You know, it just didn't all add up in the end for them.
Derek, thank you so much for your company and helping us bring that game to life.
You're more than welcome.
Derek Brookman, UEFA.com reporter there. OK, Chris, we've discussed our two games. Roma 4, Liverpool 2, PSV 3, AC Milan 1. And what we've decided we're going to do on this show, right, is try and do a combined 11 from those four teams, just for a bit of fun, right? So we're doing it from those years of those teams.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. From the actual matches, as opposed to if you just saw 50 players, who would you pick? It's actually the way they performed in the semi-finals.
Because Yapstam, I mean, we sort of mentioned it on the last show, Yapstam didn't have a great semi-final against Juventus for Manchester United. He didn't actually have a great semi-final here against Hesselink. Okay, so do you want to do your 11 first, mate? Let's have it.
Alisson in goal, pretty easy that, I think. My back four is Cafu, and then I'm going to play Maldini and Van Dijk as the centre-backs and Lee as the left-back from PSV because he was brilliant. My midfield three is Cocu, Wijnaldum, and I've picked Van Bommel despite what Derek just said because I thought he was immense in both games, even though PSV fans have never forgiven him for the last minute winner. He's in my team. And the front three, Salah, Shevchenko and Kaká. So I've gone 4-3-3.
No, we're pretty similar there, mate. We've both gone for Alisson, who, despite conceding seven goals, at the hands of Liverpool then persuaded them to spend millions of pounds on him. But I've got the same back five. Alisson in goal, Cafu, Maldini, Van Dijk and Lee. How boring is that? We've got the same. Then I've got a midfield of Nainggolan, Cocu and Kaká. So I've got Kaká in three-man midfield. And then I've got Mane and Salah. I mean, Salah obviously took all the headlines, but both were just unbelievable over the two legs. So I've got Salah, Mane and Shevchenko. We're actually in relative agreement.
Yeah.
That's quite surprising.
That is. Next time we'll have to ensure that we completely disagree, of course.
Yeah, because I want to have an argument with you, let's face it. Okay, let us know which was your favourite player and which was your favourite of the two games as well on Twitter at Champions League using hashtag UCL Classics. Chris, a quick reminder of how you can watch these two amazing games in full on UEFA.tv.
Yeah, simply go to UEFA TV or download the app on the Apple and Play stores. Log in or register and it's free to watch. Tuesday the 19th of May, that's at 5 o'clock CT. It's PSV against AC Milan. And then on Wednesday the 20th of May at the same time, it's Roma against Liverpool. If you miss them, they are then loaded onto UEFA TV, so you can watch them forever.
OK, we'll be back next week to preview two more UEFA.TV games, classics from the Champions League. But for now, from Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly, it's goodbye.